Connolly presiding.
Thank you and good morning to the Court of Appeals Zoom arguments. We have three cases today. As I don't think anyone knows, but today is our first day of live streaming. Tomorrow you will be able to hear a audio recording of this, but please keep in mind that our court rules prohibit anyone from taping this for their own purposes or for any reason. So please just pay attention to that. Our first case this morning is case 823-0390, Dr. Fries et al. Versus Dr. I hope I pronounced this right, Lighting et al. As all parties are aware, counsel for the appellant will have 15 minutes for their argument in chief. Counsel for the respondent will have 15 minutes. And finally, appellant's counsel will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. So whenever you are ready, counsel for the appellant, please begin by telling us who you are in a loud, clear voice, please.
Good morning, Your Honors. This is Bradley Clutcher of Barna, Guzzi, and Steffen on behalf of the appellants.
You may begin, Mr. Clutcher.
Thank you, Your Honor. And may it please the court. The district court erred in entering a monetary judgment for $2,357,327 on the arbitration panel's declaration of a new purchase price. The district court also erred in awarding prejudgment interest on the arbitration panel's monetary amount of declaration of a new purchase price. As a result, this court should reverse the decision of the district court. First of all, the district court erred in entering a monetary judgment on the declared new purchase price. The decision of the arbitration panel was a declaration of the new purchase price and not a monetary award. The district court impermissibly modified the arbitration panel's declaration by entering a monetary judgment for $2,357,327 against the panel.
Counsel, let me ask you this. How is what the arbitration panel did here, i.e. identifying the dollar amount of the new purchase price, how is that functionally different than an appraisal panel entering an amount when loss is disputed between parties?
Your Honor, it's two different issues, because in the case of the arbitration panel for an insurance loss, there actually has a loss. So you have fire damage that occurred and the loss actually exists. And then in that case, the parties can pay an amount right away for the amount of the loss. And the arbitration panel is just brought in to resolve a dispute between the two parties as to what the amount of that particular loss is. In this case,
and I understand that it's a different kind of loss, but here the parties disputed. I mean, there was no dispute. As I understand it, the respondents transferred their ownership interest to your clients with the understanding that they would, you know, they would get part of this purchase price. And so the only thing the arbitrators did here was decide the amount of money that the respondents were entitled to receive, right?
They did decide the amount, but it wasn't the total amount they would receive, because there were additional offsets that had to occur as part of the contract between the parties. What makes this difference is this is a settlement agreement. It's a contract. And the issue here is you have an amount that you're setting aside to pay a purchase price. So, for example, in this case, there was originally a purchase price agreed to, but that contingency didn't occur. That closing didn't happen. So they had to do a new purchase price. And when that new purchase price had to be done, the mechanism that was chosen by the parties to arrive at the new purchase price was an arbitration panel. So they weren't compensating for a loss that occurred. What they were doing is setting the new purchase price. That new purchase price then got set. And then they had to do additional offsets related to the parties' agreements to get the final amount that gets paid to the party. And so that takes it out of the context of an insurance context where they're simply determining the loss, whereas here they're declaring the amount of the purchase price. In fact, if you look at the arbitration panel's decision, it's in Doc Index 24, page 163, paragraph 10. They specifically say, because the original sale to FBN did not close, the parties have entered into arbitration to determine the new purchase price based on the fair market value of the corporate entities. So they're specifically acknowledging that they're there to determine the new purchase price, not to award an amount of damages. Then when you get to the end of their arbitration decision, what the arbitration panel does, again, in paragraph 5, it's on page 168 of Doc Index 24, they declare the new purchase price for the claimant's interest in the corporate entities is as set forth in conclusions 3 and 4 above. And then,
but again, my question is how is that declaration, that's how you want to characterize that, different than a declaration appraisal panel makes that this is the amount of money that this loss is worth? I know we're not dealing with a loss, but we're dealing with the question about what amount of money are these companies worth? How I just don't understand why that is a declaration rather than a decision about a monetary award.
Well, let's take the, maybe it's best to put it in the context of one of the cases we had. If you take the Nguyen versus Hoang case, which is the unpublished decision from the Minnesota Court of Appeals, now it would be called non-precedential, but at the time it was unpublished. In that case, the court declared what was due on the contract for deed and declared the amount that was due. It's the same thing here. You're declaring the amount of the purchase price. And so it's the same thing as in that case, which the Court of Appeals recognized was a declaration and not an amount of damages. And so that's why it's analogous to that, as opposed to a fire loss, where you have an amount that you've actually been injured and lost a certain amount of money and you have to be paid for that. Here, the arbitration panel is determining the price you're supposed to pay to close your transaction to get the transaction done. And in this case, if you read the arbitration panel's decision, they don't say you're entitled to a monetary judgment in X amount of dollars. Instead, they say this is the new purchase price. And then they specifically note this new purchase price does not include a $750,000 reduction pursuant to the party's July 7th, 2021 settlement term sheet. That $750,000 reduction is to be implemented separately by the parties. The courts, the arbitration panel specifically recognizing there that they don't have the authority to offset those things because their job was simply to declare the new purchase price, not enter a monetary judgment. And then when the district court took and entered a monetary judgment on it, they exceeded their authority because that is a modification of what the arbitration panel did.
And I understand that, but what the bottom line was always going to be that respondents were going to get money after this arbitration procedure, and they were going to get money offset by the $750,000 and other things. But I mean, they're recovering money as a result of the arbitration panel's decision, right?
I would not call it a recovery of money, Your Honor. What I would call it is they would be paid the purchase price under the agreement between the parties that the parties had agreed to. So when you say recovery of money, that makes it sound like they're recovering for a loss.
Well, wait a minute. I mean, how can you say the parties agreed to it? I mean, that's why you had to go to arbitration to begin with.
But the parties agreed to the procedure for determining that new purchase price if the original purchase did not close on the original purchase price.
Well, you know, I'm not so sure I agree with that characterization. But, you know, I'd like to go to a different subject, which is, you know, how else was respondents going to, you know, get the arbitration award unless they brought a motion to confirm it in the district court?
Well, they didn't need to get it confirmed because, and this gets to the mootness argument, Your Honor, the amount had already been paid. Once the amount was declared for the new purchase price, the parties applied it pursuant to the agreement of the parties and the money was paid out. And so once the...
When you say the money was paid out... When was the money paid out?
Was it paid out
the day you got the award?
It was paid out in December. Let me see. I can find the exact date for you here.
Well, as I recall from the record, you didn't send a check until after they brought their motion. Is that to confirm? Would that be a fair statement?
That is true. They did not get the check till after that, but we had also already said we would send them a check before that. Because,
well, you know, I wrote them
immediately after the arbitration award came down and said, hey, we'll cut you a check for this. And then we had some disagreement about they didn't want to waive their prejudgment interest claim. And I then told them in a letter, that's okay, fine. You don't waive it. I'll get the check to you. And so that's that kind of caused the delay in there.
Right. But I mean, it's fair to say most people, you know, most people bring a motion to confirm an arbitration award. I mean, that's generally the way it's done, so that that way everyone knows they're going to get their money. I mean, would that be a fair statement, counsel?
I think most people do bring a motion to confirm awards, but in this particular case, it wasn't necessary because what we were doing was getting the purchase price so we could pay them. They brought the motion
right,
to confirm.
But you've been arguing about the purchase price for years. So, I mean, I could understand the skepticism on the part of the respondent. So, but, you know, on that note, you know, looking at the arbitration agreement and the whole prejudgment interest issue, you know, I'm looking on, I guess it's the second page. The arbitrator shall have no authority to make any further determination. So, you know, as I understand your argument, you know, they couldn't award prejudgment interest. But isn't it the reason? And so now we get into an argument about whether they're expanding their authority. But I mean, everyone agreed they didn't have that. So as a result of the fact that they never had the argument to begin with, or excuse me, the power to begin with, explain to me again why, since they brought a motion in district court to confirm the award, and here I'm not talking about the setoffs yet, I'll get to that later. Explain to me again why you can't get prejudgment interest just as you can on every other judgment, including motions to compel arbitration awards. And it seems to me the cases you've cited are not quite like this one. But explain to me why I'm wrong.
Well, Your Honor, I don't think any of these cases are quite like this one. This is a unique set of facts and circumstances, but I think they're closer to the Wynn and Elon cases than they are to the Polar case. And the reason for that is because in both those cases, you have a declaration as to the rights of the parties. In the Wynn case, you have a declaration as to the amount owing on the contract for deed. And in the Elon case, you have a declaration of the amount that there's a partnership and there has to be a buyout of the partners in the particular case. Here, you have a declaration of what the purchase price is for the buyout, which seems to be closer to those two cases. In Polar, on the other hand, you have an amount that's awarded for the loss that happened as a result of the fire damage that occurred. And there's two contingencies that have to happen in this particular case in order for their payment to be made. That's the arbitration panel has to make a determination of what the new purchase price is. As Mark Fries testified, it wouldn't be possible to pay the new purchase price until that declaration was made. And then the second part is you have to do the offsets that the parties had agreed to get to a final number to pay them. Unlike in the fire case, there's no offset to apply except outside the context. There, the court is determining the loss. The arbitration panel is determining loss. Here, you're determining the new purchase price instead.
Counsel, isn't the use of the word entitled to the award suggest pecuniary damages and thus prejudgment interest?
I disagree with that, Your Honor. The use of the word entitled means that they're saying this is the amount of the new purchase price that they're entitled to. So it's always in the context of the new purchase price. If you look at the arbitration panel's decision, they never used the words monetary judgment. They never used the words entitled to a specific sum of money. They always say it in the context of new purchase price, because they're plugging it into the contract. So when you read the contract, you now have the new purchase price to plug in. Once you plug that in, now you can go and look at the other agreements of the parties and do the set-offs that have to be done pursuant to the other agreements of the parties. So it's not a case like the fire insurance claim where you had a previous payment already made. Here you have a set-off that you've got to take off of it pursuant to the parties' agreements between each other. Those were losses, actually, that my client had incurred years before.
Well, so the fact that there was an offset to you negates the use of the word entitled. Is that what you're suggesting?
No, not the loss to me negating the use of the word entitled. What I'm saying is the use of the word new purchase price negates that it's a monetary award.
By using those words, even though the panel finds it to be the party's entitled to the award, doesn't that suggest pecuniary damages? I guess your answer is no to you.
Yeah, it does not. And I think what they're saying is it's entitled to that as a new purchase price under the agreement, because that's the words they use. They call it a new
purchase price. Yeah, okay. Right.
So in the end, this is a situation where a monetary judgment was not awarded by the arbitration panel and shouldn't have been awarded by the district court. In addition, prejudgment interest should not be awarded, should not have been awarded by the district court. And the reason prejudgment interest is not appropriate is that there's not a monetary judgment in this particular case. So again, it all ties back to this existence of whether a monetary judgment should be granted or not granted. And the I'm sorry, Your Honor.
No, I'll save my question till rebuttal.
So the point being that in the context of Elon and the Wynn cases and then the Gone cases, they specifically recognize, and this is taken directly from a quote in the Elon case, the arbitration award in this case was not for the recovery of money. Rather, the award ordered Elon to transfer his partnership to Northway and ordered Northway to pay Elon for that partnership interest.
You will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. We'll now hear for counsel for the respondent, please.
Thank you. Kevin Strupp representing the respondents. I think the briefing laid this out, but a little bit of background. So the parties reached a mediated settlement agreement August 24, 2020, because certain parties in the business wanted to do a sale. My clients were not in favor of that sale, and to step out of the way, transferred their ownership in those companies at the mediated settlement on August 24, 2020. The ultimate sale that was contemplated at mediation did not occur. There was a delay in informing my clients that that did not occur. So that led under the mediated agreement to a demand for arbitration that was made May 28, 2021. There was the normal delay in picking arbitrators, getting organized. So there's a detailed claim ultimately filed by my clients for purposes of the arbitration in January 2022. Both the demand for arbitration and the detailed claim said that we would be entitled to pre-award interest. So that was notified at the very beginning. We ended up arguing the matter to arbitrators, a two-day hearing. We made the pitch for pre-award interest. The arbitration panel deferred on the basis they did not have jurisdiction or authority to award that, implication being we needed to go to district court, which of course we did with the motion to confirm the arbitration award. Now, on the argument of mootness, and at some point I was a little confused, but apparently the argument of mootness is that because we did not receive, I'll use the phrase damages, did not receive pecuniary damages, that somehow we don't have a judgment that would allow pre-award interest under any circumstances. I think that is not consistent with the broadening of the statute that the legislature did, which made pre-award interest for arbitration, because originally the statute did not, and is not consistent with the cases that have been issued that seem very broad in awarding interest. Now, the Wang case and the contract for deed, I'll simply note on a contract for deed, there's already interest in the contract for deed that's required to be paid on the unpaid principal balance. So getting pre-award interest would be a double down and therefore not allowed.
Counsel, I had one question. I'm looking at the judge's order on page 6. I guess it's the third paragraph where he says, in our present case, the agreement of the parties for Dr. Wayne Fries and Mr. Mark Fries to accept payments, and then he has quotation marks that say, does not constitute a release, waiver, or settlement of the claims for pre-award interest, the motion pending with the court, and that such pre-award interest claim remains open for the decision by the court, close quote. Could you tell me where that quote is from?
That would be from my letter to Mr. Kletcher confirming that we could accept the checks without a waiver of the pre-award interest claim.
Thank you.
So the Wang case, you already have interest being paid because it's a contract for deed. The contract calls for interest. Therefore, you don't get pre-award interest. That would be almost a double down. There's also the case talking about a buyout of a partnership where that partnership agreement or company agreement called for interest to be paid on the money. So again, you don't get pre-award interest or pre-judgment interest because it would be a double down. Now, it's interesting on the one insurance case, even though the insurance contract said you don't get interest, the court nonetheless awarded, and it was confirmed, pre-award interest, which is consistent.
Mr. Stroup, even if we agreed with you that this arbitration award would be that in pre-award interest would be appropriate under 549.09, I'm troubled by the fact that the district court order makes no offset for what I believe the parties agree to, and that is that there should be this $750,000 reduction. Why would we affirm the district court's award of interest on that amount, which I think the parties agree was never owing?
It's a separate contract, and the timing on that is we have the settlement at mediation August 24, 2020. We've got a demand for arbitration May 28, 2021. The offset agreement, because these parties had numerous businesses and numerous entanglements and debates, which I all think are really losses if you start looking at this whole combined mess. So the agreement to do the offset was to settle a separate, different company, not involved in this arbitration. A different company they owned, they had a dispute on. My clients took it over on the agreement that there would be this offset. The agreement on that is in July 2021. And it's a contract after the fact that once we sort out this dispute arising out of the mediation, then the offset would apply. So our position is it's a separate offset by contract outside the arbitration. The arbitrators didn't consider it, didn't deal with it, because they considered it separate and outside the arbitration.
Mr. Stroup, did this side agreement relating to the offset make any reference as to whether it would be, you know, before or after the award of any prejudgment interest, or was it just silent?
It's silent on that issue. It says it's okay after the arbitration award, but it's silent on the pre-award interest issue.
Thank you.
But our position is the condition precedent and that the offset occurs after the award. Now, interestingly enough, if appellants wanted to, they should have brought a motion to modify or correct the judgment issued by the court by arguing that offset should have been applied by the court. And that's by statute 572B.20. No such motion to modify or correct was ever brought. Our argument would be that this offset issue was waived or relinquished by failure to bring that motion to modify or correct.
So you, let me make sure I understand that. Are you arguing that there should be no reduction when calculating interest for the $750,000 the parties had agreed would be the reduction? Or are you saying that the appellants have waived that offset entirely by not raising that issue by way of a motion to modify the arbitration award?
No, we applied the offset because we're contractually obligated. But what I'm saying is it does not affect or reduce, because there's two ways the court could affirm this. The court could affirm the pre-award interest on the full amount, or it could apply the 750 deduction and then calculate pre-award interest on the remaining balance, which is a backup argument being made by appellants. Our position is it should be on the full award and then thereafter reduced by the 750. But there is the counter argument, the 750 deduction or offset should be applied and interest determined on the net. We don't think that's how the agreement of the parties reads. We believe the procedure here, because the arbitration is completely separate from, and this is a simple separate contractual obligation. But as the court noted, our agreements are silent on this whole pre-award interest and whether and how the $750,000 offset would apply. So it's a debate certainly between the parties.
Counsel, just to be clear on that, then you're suggesting that your client was entitled to prejudgment interest on that money of the outset, the $750,000.
Yes. And that's what the trial court determined, and that was argued, I believe, to the trial court. And you're right, the trial court decision is kind of silent on it, but that issue was in front of the trial court, and the trial court simply applied the interest calculation on the full award before and without deducting the $750,000.
Without being very specific as to what it was doing. I mean, in other words, it didn't specify that it was intentionally including the offset, correct?
Correct, but the numbers tie to the fact there's no offset applied. When you follow the trial court's order, it's clear they did not apply the offset, but determined the interest on the full amount.
I ask you another question about the calculation of interest. The district court concluded that respondents are entitled to 516 days of pre-award interest. Does that run from the time of the demand for the arbitration until the time the district court issued its order confirming the award?
I believe so. It certainly runs from when the demand for arbitration is made on May 28, 2021, and either at the point where I brought the motion or when the court issued the order. But
is that consistent with 549.09? Because wasn't the appellant's offer closer to the amount of the award than your client's demand? Wouldn't interest then stop at the time of the offer?
Well, that gets the prevailing party issue. And clearly, we're only entitled to pre-award interest if we're the prevailing party. And so, it's the last position of the parties, the way we read the statute. And if you read our brief, we go through the numbers. And we do have to apply, in our opinion, a true-up to compare the demand to what the arbitrators did, because our demand included pre-award interest. The arbitrators did not cover that issue. So when you subtract out the interest that was in my last demand letter, you then get that our demand, pulling out pre-award interest, our demand is for $2,485,265. The offer by appellants, which did not include interest because their position is we're not entitled to interest, so on a true-up, apples to apples, their offer is $2,055,277. We were high by $127,673. They were low by $302,050. We're closer when you subtract out the pre-award interest. And my letter itemized that because I could see this problem was going to hit. We're going to have a debate about what was the demand, what was the offer. So when you see my last demand letter, the last positions, I itemize how I calculate that. So our position is we can do the true up, and that should be done to be consistent with the statute and what was going on during the negotiations. So we're closer. We believe clearly we are the prevailing parties. Now, it was interesting when Mr. Kletcher was speaking, he talks about the $750,000 offset, and he talks about his clients thought they had losses, which entitled them to the $750,000 offset. And I think that's some of the background the court needs to be aware of. There was a lot of horse trading here. These guys had multiple businesses and a lot of debates among them, and horse trading that led to this mediated settlement agreement in August 2020, and now further negotiations that led to the offset. So the offset is a loss issue. So if the court wants to combine this all together, we're talking about money. And on my little mind, money is damages, it gets paid. But especially in the background here, the debates between the parties, this is pecuniary. It's not merely calculating a purchase price, especially when the offset issue comes into play, because that was involving a loss debate between these parties. So our position is quite clear. It's not moot. We were prevailing. This is damages. It's pecuniary. The other issue is a lot of the case law talks about that the mere delay in paying is a pecuniary issue, a loss issue, giving rise to a claim for pre-award interest. Certain the cases talk about that, and I think that's consistent with the intent of the statute. And our position is the pre-award interest should be on the full amount before the offset, but certainly there's an alternative position. The court can apply the 750 offset, and then it would be after that offset, the interest would be calculated on the remaining net amount. And if you do that, you're certainly into a loss claim, because that's what the $750,000 was all about, as indicated by Mr. Kletcher. I have nothing further. Any questions?
Thank you. I don't believe the panel does. Mr. Kletcher, you'll have the last word, sir.
Thank you, Your Honors. I just want to address a few issues that were raised in the responsive argument and focus on the issues relating to the offset amounts and the interest calculation, and whether the prevailing party and applying that portion of the statute. First, on the offset portion, their argument essentially is that we're not entitled to an offset, even though the contractual agreements of the parties provide that there's supposed to be an offset of $750,000, and the panel specifically noted that that was supposed to be applied by the parties. In essence, what they're saying is that because an arbitration panel heard our claim for the new purchase price, we get prejudgment interest, but you guys don't get any prejudgment interest on your $750,000. That's not what the law is encouraging. The law is encouraging settlement. Law is encouraging parties to try to seek to resolve their issues. And by including that $750,000 offset, which the court has done in insurance cases, you are getting the dollar amounts reduced on the prejudgment interest to get down to what the parties can actually claim as their loss in a particular case. If that's the case and you do that $750,000 offset and you do the other offsets, you arrive at a much different number than what the district court below arrived at. And that's an argument we presented to the court, and the court didn't adopt that particular point. So as a result of that, there has to be an offset to comply with the cases. If the court determines that this is a monetary judgment and not a declaratory judgment, then there's got to be an offset for that amount of money. The second point relates
and to... And if we agreed with you, Mr. Kletcher, then it would be remanded to deduct $750,000 from the arbitration award and then have the prejudgment... Well, if we agree that prejudgment... If we agree with you that there's an offset and disagreed that on prejudgment interest, it would be remanded for $750,000 to be deducted from the arbitration award and then prejudgment interest to be awarded on the balance. Would that be the remand instruction? Well, obviously you want a whole reversal, but is that sort of what you would want?
Yeah, so it would be a remand to do that. And then the other offsets as well that were set forth in the document, there was additional $65,920, $28,394, and $32,320. We spelled that out on page 33 of our opening brief.
Were those offsets agreed to? I mean, besides the 750?
It wasn't specifically itemized in an offset. It was listed as a payment that was to be made. But that's the same concept, because if it's a your deduction to your total loss on that amount.
Thank you.
And then the second point, Your Honor, relates to the issue of the prevailing party and the calculation the settlement offers. They talk about the fact they say they were closer in their number because they included prejudgment interest in their number, but they didn't. Their prejudgment interest number was included in their total dollar amount. When they actually made the offer, their offer is still at that $2,900,000. They don't get to deduct it twice. They can't deduct it from on top and deduct it from their $2,900,000 settlement offer. Because when you do that, that's how you get down to a lower number. Our number of $2,055,000 was only $300,000 away. Their number was $630,000 away.
And doesn't that go to when interest stops running rather than whether the respondents were the prevailing parties?
That's correct, Your Honor. The interest stops running when that settlement offer was made. So it goes from the date of demand for arbitration till the date that the counteroffer was made that wasn't accepted. That was the last offer. So yes, it affects the calculation time period. So basically it cuts off that interest going forward from that date forward. That's exactly right. Your Honors,
Obviously, I believe that this was a declaratory judgment and not a monetary judgment. And I'm asking the court to reverse the decision of the district court. I do thank you very much for the good, the excellent questions that were presented by the panel today, and I appreciate your time in looking at this matter.
Thank you, counsel. The matter is submitted. We will be issuing our decision within 90 days.